nursing for runaways, too much sugar, the ANA all-powerful, and a look at delirium. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to this week's episode. As we roll into the end of August here, a lot of you that are listening to the show may be going back to school or starting your nursing classes, either as an initial training as an RN or LPN, or perhaps going back to school for your master's or even doctorate degree. I have a lot of you listening to the show and checking in every week, so I just want to wish you all luck as your classes start to roll out here and encourage you to keep in touch with me. Let me know how things are going and if there's anything you'd like me to cover here on the show. You know, I come up with tips every week, but I never turn down free ideas. So please send those ideas and comments into me here. You can reach me by email at comments@nursingshow.com. And you can also just leave a comment right over on the Nursing Show site or catch up with me over at Facebook or on Twitter. And both of those, you can reach me, facebook.com/podmedic or twitter.com/podmedic. And I look forward to hearing from all of you, whether you're making a correction of something I may have said in the past or offering a suggestion for a news item or a tip of the week. It's always great to hear from the Nursing Show listeners. Of course, you'll find links to everything in the show notes for this and every other episode over at nursingshow.com. So take advantage of heading over there and finding all of the information you might need for anything we talk about, from a news item to any of the tip of the weeks. I always provide additional link resources for you to go and look further into any topic I might be covering. And that's because it's your job to take the information that I present in a very general way and figure out how to apply it to your own particular nursing practice. And that's your job. I can give you some general information, but you need to understand how to apply it and to follow up on the information I provide. Jump on into this week's news, and I'll lead off with a story I pick up that looks at different nursing interventions. I always look for new studies in the news, new research, and there's a study published recently in the Journal of Adolescent Health, and it's going to be looking at nursing interventions that are specifically helping runaways, teenage runaways, reconnect with their families, with society in general, and to help them and their families cope with getting that connection back in place and being returned to the home environment. And this is just one of those things that just shows how many ways nurses reach into people's lives in ways other than working in a hospital on a med-surg floor, which I think most people think of, or think of an emergency department nurse. So home health care nurses and follow-up nurses from hospital facilities, along with social workers, are great resources to help anyone with a health issue or even a mental health issue to reintegrate themselves with their families or with society after an injury, a surgery, or any kind of health-related or life-altering event. This particular study found that by helping these sexually exploited runaway girls reconnect with their family, they were able to reduce the trauma associated with having been part of a sexually exploitation situation or rape, and helped them to bring back some of the healthy behaviors that they may have had before, or help them to adapt and learn new healthy behaviors if that is what is needed. And this reaches not just into the family, but into the community in general, including into helping to reintegrate them into the schools. Now, this was led by a University of British Columbia researcher and also the Children's Hospitals and Clinics of Minnesota and a nurse practitioner there. And the study really just goes to show some of the many ways that we can affect our patients even after they may have left the traditional setting in which we see them. Are there programs to help follow up with any of your patients, whether it's a cardiac patient or a post-surgical patient from something as simple as an appy? Are we following up with these patients quickly after the fact, maybe a phone call 24 hours to 48 hours later to make sure they understood their discharge instructions, to go over those discharge instructions again to remind them of some important points? And then, of course, for people with longer-term issues, with chronic health problems, what can we do to help them and their families learn to adjust to what is going on in their lives or what's happened in the past? And I just wanted to point out this particular article. I think it's a great look at just the many different ways nurses care for their patients in unusual situations. Let's move on and take a look at some very usual or common situations. In fact, probably too common, and that's one of the problems. The American Heart Association has released guidelines for Americans warning against too much sugar in their diets. There are sugars added to many kinds of processed packaged foods, and of course, sugar beverages like sodas and juices, and they are far too common in the diet of Americans, according to the American Heart Association. And heck, according to me, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, I think I can agree with that. I think we all can. They're talking about the fact that the binging on sugar drives metabolic changes, including exploding obesity rates, increased rates of diabetes and other obesity and health-related problems associated with being overweight, and that they are issuing a recommendation that women should have no more than 100 calories a day of added sugar. Men should not be over 150 calories a day in added sugar. Want to know how much that is? One 12-ounce can of soda contains about 33 grams of added sugar, or about 130 calories, which is more than a woman is allowed in a day, according to these recommendations. Diet sodas are not necessarily better just simply because they continue to support the sweet tooth. So that may be a problem as well. So what are we going to do? Well, we can add up a lot of extra calories that we add into our diet when we look at all of the sugar-sweetened beverages and sugars that are added to things that we may not even understand. Regular dinner foods, things that we might add to our dinner foods. Let's look at ketchup, for instance, a very favorite condiment. Heck, my son thinks ketchup's a vegetable. Well, guess what? One single serving of a regular low-sodium ketchup contains up to 40 grams of added sugar per cup. So if you add ketchup to your eggs or ketchup to your French fries or ketchup to just about everything that ends up on your plate the way my son does, you end up adding a lot of additional sugar to your diet. And this can be a problem. What are we looking at? Other things that you might think are healthy, like dried fruits that maybe have had sugar added to have a candied coating to them. You might say, oh, dried fruits, it's fruit. It's good for you. No, not. You know, as nurses, you probably already know this, but these are things that can be discussed with family members or patients as you talk to them about things like going home and their diet, and you can point them to these things or print articles from the American Heart Association and other sites about dietary sugar. Put them up in plain view in your offices, in your facilities, provide them for patients as additional information and support. Again, this goes back to just that previous article. What are we doing to provide additional care once they leave our facilities? Is it in our facility's best interest not to have them come back? Probably not. That comes into that, you know, the facilities are in the business of charging patients for coming into the hospital. It's a catch-22 to sit there and say we don't want them to come back, because if no patients came back, we'd all be out of work. But on the other hand, we want to have responsible health care as part of our mandate, and we want to make sure that we're providing patients the information they need to be healthy. So I just want to point this article out to you, and I hope you will follow up and check the links or look in the information you may have available to you about dietary concerns for your patients. Finally, last article for the day as far as news. We always talk about the American Nurses Association and leadership roles in healthcare reform and other things. But what about, you know, all of our nurses and how we are represented? Well, just so you know that nursing is considered a very influential part of the healthcare marketplace. A recent study or recent announcement from Modern Healthcare's 100 Most Powerful People in Healthcare looked at the American Nurses Association and found the ANA president to be among the 100 most powerful people in healthcare in the United States. Now, this is from a nomination. 25,000 people were nominated by readers of Modern Healthcare, and the top 100 were decided by online votes over the last several weeks. Now, these popularity contests, how much weight do they hold? Maybe not that much when you're looking at who's one, two, or three on the list. But I think when you look at the list as a whole, it does give an indication of overall public attitude, at least among this group of readers, about who they think are important in healthcare in this country. They clearly believe nurses have a leadership role in healthcare. The tip and trick of the week. This week, we're going to talk a little bit about delirium. Now, you can't really talk delirium without at least looking at dementia and maybe depression and vice versa. But you know what? We'll talk about dementia in another episode here in the next couple of weeks. And I want to give each their due because it's something that we all face with some of our patients. And we need to understand the key differences between delirium and dementia, how to recognize what some of the causes are of each, and understand interventions that are appropriate for especially patients with delirium, which are often indications of something else going on, an underlying pathology that can be, in fact, treated. So let's look at these what are often called organic brain syndromes or cognitive disorders, and let's find out a little bit more of what we look at when we think about dementia and delirium. Let's look at delirium first, and we want to understand that really this is a three-part problem because people that are acting confused or seeming kind of unfocused can be that way for a variety of reasons. And delirium, dementia, or even depression can all present in similar ways, and it's important to recognize some of the key differences. Obviously, people who are depressed will have a flat affect and maybe not be incredibly focused on their surroundings or seem confused or off target because their mind's dwelling on other things. What do we have present here? And certainly, in some cases, we could even have instances where patients exhibit more than one of these symptoms at the same time. Delirium is a common occurrence, especially in elderly patients in a medical surgical setting, also occurring commonly in a nursing home setting. I know in my experience in the past, before I was an RN, bringing in patients as a paramedic from nursing homes, we would frequently be called to nursing homes for patients with altered mental status and unsure exactly what was going on with the patients. And you'd look at the ideas of diagnoses of what they had listed on their face sheets, and you'd sit there and you'd say, well, they have dementia. What's different? Well, delirium is something that occurs as a sudden onset and is associated with more hospital stays, associated with ER visits, associated with patients with increased costs and increased morbidity and mortality. So it's something that needs to be addressed, especially when it's recognized and dealt with quickly. It most often happens right after either a surgical intervention or after a change in a medication. Patients experience side effects, and elderly patients, as we all know, are more susceptible to many of these side effects. Definitions that I've found for delirium. Basically, the key definition for delirium is the word acute. It means that this is a sudden onset. This is a quick and rapid change in the patient's mental status. And so when you notice a change in their mental status that occurs rapidly, it is a sign that there is some change either in perfusion, which can happen in cases of shock, or it could be related to changes in blood chemistry, changes in their drug doses and where when they've gone from a therapeutic dose to a toxic dose. All these things can happen and almost always represent some problem that can be addressed to reduce the duration of the delirium and to help with a recovery. It is classified in the DSM-4 criteria, acute onset, change that develops over a short time. It may fluctuate also, get better and then worse during the course of the day. And we see that with a lot of different patients. So we have to be very careful to understand underlying mental status. The altered level of consciousness includes a lessened ability to focus or to maintain attention in a single location or appropriately. We may also see things like problems with their memory, disturbances to their ability to speak, maybe be disoriented. They may have some just altered thinking. They have perceptual problems and unable to deal with an existing problem. Maybe they have an underlying dementia that they were dealing with fine. Now they can't because of the overlying delirium. There are different ways to diagnose this. A history and a physical exam are important. Looking at key lab findings to identify if there's any blood chemistry that needs that has caused the problem, and also looking at recent medications and other medical interventions are all part of the process of diagnosing this problem. There are three things that we need to think about. Changes in consciousness. I've heard it described as, you know, kind of hazy or fuzzy. These patients are not quite paying attention the way they should be. They are confused, but still may be trying to function in some normal fashion. You will see that their thinking has become disorganized. They are unable to maintain a single line of thought. They may be jumping from thought to thought and being more fragmented in their approach. And that this change is acute and may adjust and fluctuate over time, but there is a change and it has happened relatively rapidly over maybe hours or perhaps even the course of a day. So obviously it's important to recognize this as early as possible so that we can find out what the problems are. Most often it's related to age. We see that risk factors for delirium most often related to age. There are changes in the way that their brains are handling uptake and release of things like neurotransmitters. Minor changes in drug dosing or minor changes in blood chemistry can have a huge effect on their ability to formulate thought and maintain these neurotransmitter releases and uptake. And this is important to understand. Also, there are some predisposing factors we need to understand. There may be an underlying illness that is severe, sepsis, an infection. Maybe they've had a recent surgery where they've had some blood loss. All surgery has some blood loss associated with it. Obviously, that hypovolemia can cause a problem for these patients if it's altering their blood chemistry in some way or they are unable to maintain good blood pressures. Patients who already have dementia have a greater risk to experience delirium when they have other risk factors occurring. Patients who are unable to see clearly normally, patients who need glasses and can't find their glasses. Obviously, they're becoming disoriented because they can't see where they're going and what they're doing. And then you have an underlying problem that comes in on top of that, and they're even more confused because they don't understand why they can't see. Maybe they don't know that they needed their glasses. They can't make that leap that where are my glasses? So patients with visual problems can have a higher risk factor. Also, some of the lab values to look at, we're looking for high urea, high nitrogen, creatinine ratios, and this can be related to patients who have an underlying kidney function issue. Other things to keep an eye on. Any patient that's had a need for physical restraint recently, for whatever reason, patients that have been put in physical restraints, this seems to increase their risk for having a problem with delirium. Malnutrition and dehydration. We talked about hypovolemia from surgery. Anything that can cause overall dehydration will reduce, change the blood chemistry and reduce the body's ability to function properly. Any patient with polypharmacy. What's polypharmacy? Three or more meds. If a patient has more than three meds or three or more meds, they are much more likely to have some kind of medication-related factor influencing some aspect of their body. And they're having some kind of side effect, and in fact, maybe multiple side effects from multiple drugs causing an interaction that has not been picked up on by prescribers. Patients with urinary catheters, these patients are obviously at higher risk for sepsis and infection. So anybody with a Foley in, they're at high risk for sepsis, and that sepsis also can cause patients to be at increased risk. Anything that would cause them to be immobilized, any illnesses, any recent alcohol or drug use, and of course, in other environmental influences, such as an extreme cold or extreme heat incident, patients in the wintertime that get out of their house and get disoriented and lost, that hypothermia causes them to experience delirium at a greater rate than a healthier younger adult would. So all of these things are important, and we need to look at the whole picture and try to identify the precipitating causes. We want to make sure that we provide some things for the patient to help reorient them. And these are some of the things that we can do to help bring the patient back into alignment. Obviously, we need to treat whatever the underlying problem is once it's been identified. And that is looking carefully and making sure we're monitoring our labs, making sure we're providing information to physicians as necessary when labs come back in the middle of the day after rounds or in the evenings. We need to get that information back to their physicians so that changes can be made. Or if there's a nurse practitioner on board, we need to make sure that they are aware of what's going on. Obviously, once we've corrected this problem, they're not going to get better immediately. So we need to provide other things to, A, provide and promote safety for the patient. So we don't want to restrain them, because restraints, as we talked about in our restraint episode last week, looking at why restraints cause additional problems for patients that are having cognitive difficulties. Obviously, we want to avoid restraints if at all possible, but we need these patients to remain safe. We may have to apply oxygen if they're hypoxic. We may have to deal with a drug overdose or an infection. And then once we get those things on board, we need to provide some way to ground and reorient these patients, encouraging family members to be with them and answer their questions when they become confused, reorient them to where they are. If family members are not available, this is going to require more frequent visits from you and the other members of the staff, and talking to your techs and your assistants, and make sure they understand that when they go in there to talk to the person and reorient them to where they are and what's going on to help ground them. Give them things like clocks or calendars. Provide them opportunities to get an understanding of where they are and what's going on. Write names down on whiteboards in the hospital room is a great way to do that. So they remember your name, they know where they are, all of these things. Provide information next to them on the nightstand so that they can read about what's going on and bringing them back into ground. Finally, you also need to make sure that you are keeping any instructions that you're giving them regarding their self-care. You need to give them those instructions very simply and provide frequent re-education and re-evaluation on your part that they actually understood what you said, and with a thought towards the fact that they may not remember it 10 minutes, a half hour, an hour later until they are back to some sense of norm. While we're talking about getting back to some form of baseline, let's also talk about outcomes, because one of the things that I think people don't understand about delirium is that when people have an episode of delirium, often there is not a return of cognitive function all the way back to whatever their prior baseline level was. And that's especially important to understand with anybody with an underlying dementia. Dementia is a longer-term condition, and dementia can anything that lowers a standard level of baseline and causes the dementia to become worse is obviously something to be concerned about. So how can we improve outcome and prognosis? One of the things that needs to be done is rapid recognition, understanding what's going on and recognizing that someone's mental status has changed. How do we do this? Well, there's no other way. Frequent reassessment. And so if you're not seeing your patients frequently enough, or someone that you trust isn't looking in on them to check their mental status frequently, especially in long-term care situations, you have patients that can have an ongoing delirium that lasts for, you know, a couple of days if you're in a home care situation. What about other things? Well, once we've recognized the delirium, we need to identify the cause. It may be a malnutrition. It may be an underlying infection. It may be some other incident. It may be a traumatic injury. Any of these things, we need to recognize the cause of the problem, and then we need to obviously fix the problem. We also need to put into place other interventions to help reorient the patient until they recover from whatever the problem is. And doing all of those things as quickly as possible and getting all of those things in place is what's going to provide the best possible outcome for your patient when they have an episode of delirium. So make sure that you are being aware of what's going on, reassessing your patients frequently, and understanding as much of their medical history as possible will all help you to understand what else might be going on when you identify a change in mental status. That's our look at delirium. Remember, there are links in the show notes to a couple of great articles I found online having to do with delirium, including a great journal article that looks at nursing issues and identifying dementia, delirium, and depression and differentiating between them. So check these links out in the show notes over at nursingshow.com. That's going to wrap up another episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind everybody that you'll find links to everything, including the news items and the tip of the week, all available over at nursingshow.com. You can also leave comments there on any of the articles, either the show notes articles or the other articles posted throughout the course of the week. We try to provide a lot of information over there and commentary on different issues in nursing. And one of the things that makes commentary good is when you comment back on them and let us know, do you agree or disagree? Are we oversimplifying or undersimplifying? Let us know. And we can really make this a great resource for all nurses over at the Nursing Show site. Don't forget, you can also send in any comments or suggestions, questions, or corrections to comments@nursingshow.com. We love to get emails from the listeners. And of course, don't forget, you can check out our Nursing Show page over at Facebook as well. And I can direct you to that. You can find me over at Facebook at facebook.com/podmedic or twitter.com/podmedic. Time to wrap up, and we'll close out the show with a song from Laura Clapp. We've played some of her songs before in the past. This is one of her newer songs. It's called Just Let Go. I urge you to check out the link in the show notes, and if you like what you hear, you'll also find a link to purchase her music over at the iTunes store. Support these independent artists. Let them know that you like hearing their songs here on podcasts like The Nursing Show. That's it for me. I will close out and remind all of you that I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I want you all to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
My world changing, another season gone by. I'm gonna try to just let go. I'm gonna ride the wind, see where it takes me. Be a prisoner no more, find what I'm looking for. Just let go. If I could just let go of all my fears I've held on to for all these years. Therefore now, not yesterday, it's long gone. Time to move on and just just let go. Gonna leave my life wide open, live wild and free. Never judge by the cover, learn to trust each other and finally see. If I could just let go of all my fears I've held on to for all these years, live for now, not yesterday, it's long gone. Time to move on, just let go. Yourself slipping, but know that it's okay to fall if you just let go of all your fears you've held on to for all these years. Live for now, not yesterday.